go from there. Trevante Jaramillo, Dustin Pardue, how are you, my friend?
Very good. Thanks for having me on.
Isn't that weird how, like, we just talked and, you know, we're trying to be friends, and then I go back and I go, how are you, man? Like, it's stupid. I need to find a better way to start these things. It's getting a little annoying. Dustin, I'm very glad to have you. I know we've been talking about, you know, doing this show for you, for me, I should say. And we keep, well, I actually asked you once. You were like, yeah, and then I sort of forgot about it. So I'll say my bad.
Okay.
I know, Dustin, you used to be around the Valley here. Met you through some mutual friends. Got to hang out with you a little bit. Saw some sweet posters and record collection and some moonshine.
Some moonshine, definitely.
But to be honest, like I said before we started, like, I have a couple, you know, topics. We want to talk about your writing, obviously. Definitely want to do some music, concert stuff, some travel stuff. But, like, you and I have never really, you know, talked that much. So this is going to be a little bizarre, and I apologize. But I know, you know, we're gentlemen.
No problem.
We're gentlemen. We'll get there.
That's right. And I remember you doing some mean karaoke when I lived there.
Oh, God. Yeah. I did enjoy doing a little Metallica, a little Pantera. Those days are... past us. You asked a second ago, before I turn this thing on, like, how's Glenwood? Like, has it changed at all? You know, to be honest, it really hasn't, but there's one thing that I've noticed, and I'm taking a stand against it. I've been kind of saying shit on Twitter and that kind of stuff about it, but I can't stand the way men dress around here anymore. Like, I don't know how you feel about this kind of stuff, and again, it's meaningless. Nobody gives a shit what I think about this, but I can't tell who has a job anymore. Like, everybody has a freaking beard. Everybody's wearing, like, weird, you know, khakis with, like, Chuck Taylors. And, like, I don't know. I can't stand, like, the hipster dress code. And I'm not gonna do it. And I'm not going to stand for it personally. I'm going to start wearing the suits again for no reason. And that's going to be my own personal stand.
Well, the one thing I remember about you is you always had on a suit. You were the best-dressed person at any given place at any given time.
Well, it was weird, though, because it was always out of place. And, like, that was sort of the point. Like, of course, I was, you know, being, like, the anti-guy or whatever. Like, why are you wearing a suit? And I'm like, because I, you know, I want to look nice and I can't pull off any of this other stuff that's going on. But now, like, I don't know, man. The one thing about this town that's become real weird is... You know, a lot of the old people that we used to hang out with and stuff, a lot of people have moved on. You know, they have families. Like, even you left. So who's here now? It's like a bunch of people that no one knows. And since I don't, like, socialize with people anymore, I don't know anyone around here anymore. It's become kind of bizarre, you know? When you were here, what did you do?
Getting old.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
When you were here, what did you do?
I moved there in 2003 to work at Total Merchant Services in Basalt.
Okay, yeah.
So
yeah.
I spent 5 great years there and made some awesome friends and had a great time. Time came early in 2009 to move on to a better job, which I did here on the East Coast, and it's worked out well so far.
And
it sucked leaving a lot of friends behind, but... It really worked out for the best.
Well, one thing that I thought was, I shouldn't say I think it's bizarre because it's not bizarre, but it's funny. Like, whenever I, I'll post somebody that is going to be on the show or whatever, and like, you got a little traction when I said that you were going to be on here, and on top of that, you know people that I know that I didn't know you guys would know each other, so I think that's cool. I mean, a lot of people are going to check this out. Hopefully, I don't ruin it by being shitty.
well, they should check it out. So I'm calling them all out right now. Everyone who commented on that,
yeah, I got
they better be listening.
Damn right. so, like, you left here, and then I know that you do a lot of, like, writing. Is that just, like, freelance work? Because you do, like, magazines and, like, blogs and.
Well, I the music writing thing. Really took off for me in 2011. I had auditioned pieces for several different publications, But, you know, what you always go for the big fish, you know, Rolling Stone and Spin. But you got to know somebody to get those gigs. So it caught on for me, Examiner.com liked an audition piece I wrote on Pearl Jam. And they gave me just total creative control over a column to kind of do what I wanted. So that's been, for the past a little over 2 years, that's been kind of my fun job. Not my money. You don't make a lot of money when you're a writer, but
sure.
You make a little bit. But there are a lot of other good perks involved in it. There are times where I get media credentialed into concerts for free, which is awesome.
Hell yeah.
You get to be right up in front of the band. And I think the pinnacle of that for me was back in October. I got approved to cover Pearl Jam in New York City, which was like, okay, this is the greatest thing in the world.
Now, Pearl Jam's your band, right? Like, so, that's...
Yeah, my favorite band of all time. They approved me the day of the show, about noon that day. I was in the merchandise line, and I got an email, like, you've been approved to cover and shoot the show tonight. You got to be here so-and-so at 7:30 with these release forms. I'm like, hell yeah, I got to find a Staples and print all this stuff out. That was just amazing. That was the pinnacle for me. And the funniest part of that story was, I had to meet up with Barclays Center media people in Brooklyn, and meeting there with all these people from larger publications. There was about 10 of us in all, and everybody has these big ass cameras around their necks. It's like, I'm not a nerd. I'm not going to be that guy. I've got this little Sony handheld.
Yeah.
It's about the size of a credit card. So they're asking me, like, where's your camera? I pull it out of my pocket. Like, this is all I need, man. I shot Springsteen with this, and it worked out just fine. And so they've got these massive cameras. So we, when you're on a media row, you're, like, in between the front row of the crowd and the band at the stage. So we're all hunkered down there. Everybody's got their big-ass cameras out. I get out my little Sony, and the band comes on, and everybody's taking pictures up there, and I've got my little Sony, and it's my favorite band in the world. So I have to take breaks from taking pictures to sing along. So all the other media people got a big kick out of that. Like, is this guy like a super fan, or what is he doing? So, you know, a couple of songs in, the other, you know, the big guy started cheering me on. Like, this guy, I don't know if he's taking pictures or singing along or what to do. And I was just thinking, like, well, if they would just let me have a drink down here, I would be set.
Hell yeah.
So that was just a tremendous experience for me.
That's badass. Like, I mean, I need to ask you how you go about doing that, because I feel like, you know, I'm sort of a member of the media, maybe. Maybe somebody will think that and get in the middle of the mix with some of my bands in Denver or whatever. Probably the closest thing that I have with that would be, like, when you go to metal shows, especially, like, you know, smaller venue stuff, you can get right up on the stage, you know, and, you know, one time we saw Fear Factory in Mesa Theater, and, you know, we got to sing a line in one of the songs because, you know, that's just how close we were, and Burton was being really cool, and, saw Metallica pretty close. Like, I don't know, man, there's just something about that. You're almost like not even, like, it's not even real, you know. It's like your absolute idol is like standing right on top of you, and you're like, holy shit, you know.
That evening was just a blur. Like, it was surreal. You know, to be right there at that. To get media credentialed into something like that, you got to know who to ask, and more importantly, how to ask. So it takes a little digging. In that case, for that particular show back in July, when the show was first announced, I went through one of the media reps. I got hold of an email address from a media rep from the Barclays Center, the venue, and sent that request on, and she actually replied that day, and she's like, well, I'll forward this on to Pearl Jam's publicist, and we'll let you know. I didn't hear anything for 4 months until noon, the day of the show.
Jesus.
So you never really know if you're going to get in or not.
Well, you probably were like, you probably like, ah, no.
I had a crappy ticket, and I got upgraded to the States.
So you were like, this ain't happening. I would have heard by now. Like, so you bought?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
As normally, other bands I've gotten into, such as Gaslight Anthem, is another one of my favorite bands. When I got in, media credentialed into them, they let me know a week or so ahead of time. And that's usually how it is. You send a request, as soon as something's announced, get your name in the hat right then. And they usually let you know a week or two ahead of time if you're in or out and where you need to be.
How many times have you seen Pearl Jam live?
38.
Jesus. This is a really abstract question, but like, what is it about Pearl Jam that just gets you? Because I'm going to tell you right now, I don't like Pearl Jam. I never have. Like, I like some of their hits and like the obvious ones, but there was never I never bought a record of theirs. Nothing. Like, what is it for you that's just it?
For me, it's you would think that would be a hard question to answer, but it's really not. When I was in high school, their debut album came out, and the first lyrics I ever heard were the first lyrics to Alive, which was their first single. Since you said, "Have I got a little story for you?" That got me listening. Like, oh, this guy's got—he might actually have something to say, because at that time everybody's listening to Motley Crue and Poison, which is, they're cool in their own way, but to hear something real like that and just right out of the gate, someone bare their soul to that extent. And I got to listening more, and for the past 20, 22 years, it's just this, it's a really funny thing. Every single song, no matter what album it is, but I can go through every single song and think, I felt that way at some point. And I know exactly what he's talking about. And, maybe that's not exactly what he's talking about, but every lyric, every song says something that I might have never been creative enough to muster the words to say myself. So it's like if somebody made a soundtrack to my life and actually wrote it down on paper, there are 10 albums now really says that for me. So it's pretty much my soundtrack.
That's a damn fine answer. I felt dumb asking that, but clearly you've thought it through. Like, I mean, I don't even know. I'm torn right now. I can't decide if Metallica or Rammstein is my favorite. And I guess for me, Metallica was more like what you said about Pearl Jam for yourself would be more Metallica for me. Obviously not in the, every song they write, but I remember, like, early on being really intrigued by, like, the biblical stuff that they would talk about, being raised religious.
Yeah,
I'm like, oh, I know what they're talking about here. And, maybe other people didn't really understand what that was. I never had, like, a bad go at anything, really. But there was a couple of songs that, just the real anger. And, like, from the real young days, I was like, yeah, I could see this, But, Rammstein for me, it's a little different. Like, there's a website, I can't remember the name of it, but where you can go and, hit the song lyrics for any album, any song or whatever, and it'll have, like, the German words, and then next to it it'll have the English translations, and then in the English translation you'll see peppered in there a bunch of asterisks, and then at the bottom it'll say, like, possible, like, double meanings, because, some of the words don't exactly translate over. And Till Lindemann is a brilliant poet. And a lot of times, like, he writes in double, triple, quadruple entendre, where, like, something could be really, like a surface, he's talking about, like a, let's say, white wings or whatever, And so that's the translation, but then there's like, there's a thing in Germany that means this, and that could be, he could be talking about this other thing, that's why he said it this way. Like, I know I'm not explaining it, but you know what I mean.
Yeah. German's a hard language. I was there last year, and it was hard to catch on and communicate with people. It's a really tough language.
I imagine, and like,
if English is your only language.
It's funny because I joke all the time, like, I should speak Spanish, but I don't. And because of Rammstein, I actually know more German than Spanish. And like, so, sometimes I'll be watching a movie, like, what was I was watching, like, well, Inglourious Basterds is one. You know, anything that has a little German in it, like, if I pick up a couple words, I'm like, oh shit, I actually know that, you know? It's kind of funny. What's your,
Go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead, man.
Oh, I was just saying, I'm the only broken Spanish I know comes from my living in the valley there.
Sure. I don't even have that. I don't even bother. I'm like, eh, we'll figure it out. We'll point at things and talk slowly until we get there. What's your favorite of the 38 shows? Like, obviously the one where you're standing right below Vedder's nuts, but I mean, was there like another one that you were like, maybe the set list was one thing or just something stuck out about it?
One thing about Pearl Jam is the set list is completely different every night. That's why you go to season 38 times, because there's you never know what to expect when you go into the stadium. It's just complete blank page.
Do they do it on the fly?
Excuse me?
Do they call the songs on the fly?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand you. I'm sorry.
Do they call the set list on the fly, meaning like while they're up there, they're like, all right.
Yeah.
They do?
They do change it up a lot. They usually, how they've explained how they come up with it is usually, about a half hour before the show, they'll kind of, gauge the crowd, gauge the mood of the room, and, put together 30, 35 songs that they're going to play. And a lot of times you do see them conferring, and they'll switch something up just based on the mood. And they're so well put together and sequenced. When you see Pearl Jam, you're going to be dragged through a whole barrage of emotions, from sadness to lament to anger to rage to whatever. You're going to be dragged through a whole flurry of emotions throughout that concert. There are times where it's a couple of shows I can think of where things have happened that have been really just moving, like, wow, it's tough to see any other band do something so moving that it just quietens the crowd. A perfect example of that is in San Diego in 2006, they came out for an encore, and the lead singer, Eddie Vedder, asked if he could, tell the audience the story. And he went into this long 10-12 minute diatribe about what this song Long Road was actually about. You always knew it was about missing someone and a loss, but he's not someone that ever really explained songs and the meaning behind them and what inspired them. And the story behind that song really put 20,000 people just like, okay, should we cry now? Or
sure.
It was silent in there because people were like, wow, that song is on a lot of levels. I don't know how he could sing it and get through it every night and not cry himself. That was a really good example of sometimes, they can have the all-out ragers and play the fast, up-tempo punk songs, and sometimes you can just be moved by something when it gets really explained to you, the meaning behind it.
Sure. And you know what? Maybe that's sort of why, like I said, the Rammstein stuff, sticks with me, because it's never... There's got to be something behind some of these songs. And, like, they talk about a lot of different stuff. And, like, of course, I'm sure there's, like, the hardcore fans, they'll make the effort to try to figure out what's going on. Even if it's just to sing along and not look like a dumbass, phonetically saying a sound.
Yeah, of course.
And some of that stuff, it's like, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was just thinking about this the other day about, there's probably not a lot of times that you get to really find out why you know, a song is talking about this, or like you were just saying, like the story behind and like the reason for it being written. And then the closest thing that I can think of is like, wasn't there like a storyteller's show where like there was like a little interlude like between songs and they would kind of talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, on VH1. Yeah.
Yeah, that one. And then like the Rammstein website, like that's somebody else's speculation, but it's still like a little window into like what could be going on. And I just think that's like, that's a cool thing that you don't really get to know about.
Yeah, I miss that show. I wish they would still do it. Even, I don't know if they still do, but I haven't seen it in forever.
Well, make it again.
The
Dustin Pardew.
Yeah. we could do it in my living room. I just invite bands over.
Yeah, just invite.
It really piss the neighbors off.
Yeah, just call up Springsteen, whoever. They'll show up. It's no big deal. I just had something and I forgot. Shit. Oh, I was thinking about this because of, do you ever listen to Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds at all?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a guy where I would be like, okay, look, I want to interview you, but it's about two songs. That's all I want to know about is what was going on when you wrote these two songs. And I feel like it would go on for an hour, 2 hours, because there's got
to
be just...
I bet he would have some good stories to tell.
I heard him on Mark Maron's podcast, and like they got into a couple sort of deep things, but just to hear him just kind of talk about like, you know, drugs and women and all this kind of stuff, like he's a fascinating dude for sure. He's weird, you know. I just think,
and sometimes that's what makes the best artist.
Oh yeah, really. Absolutely.
A lot of times it does.
Well, I mean, what's more boring than like a well-adjusted rock star? Like, who gives a shit, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if there have been any successful ones that are well-adjusted.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I can't think of one.
Maybe Miley Cyrus. She seems to be doing well lately. And I applaud her for it. I'm not smashing her. I love her. So.
I'm not smashing her either. She knows marketing. And everybody that's blasting her all the time and talking about her, well, you're doing exactly what she wanted you to do. So the joke's on you, everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
the joke's on you because I don't remember how he said it, but Oscar Wilde once said that the only thing worse than being talked badly about is being not talked about at all.
Sure.
Paraphrasing there, but of course, everybody's doing exactly what she wanted them to do. So, hey. She knows how to market. Got to hand it to her.
Yeah, for sure. So, like, when discussing your column, like, do they give you? You said you have full creative control. Like, what do you? Like, what angles do you take when you write about music?
It's really here's my creative process. Normally, on Friday nights, I turn off the TV when I get home from work and just listen to my whole, just put my iTunes library on random, and that's like 30,000 songs, and just listen to music, and ideas come, you know. I might, recently I, on a Friday night, heard a song from the Bouncing Souls, and they've been around for 30 years, and nobody knows who they are, and, you know, and that's an article idea, you know, bands that have been around forever that you should have heard of but haven't. And so things like that come up to me.
Talk about your last one. I was reading it earlier. It was your Thanksgiving column.
the Thanksgiving article?
Yeah.
That one came to me. It was actually at work last Thanksgiving. I was talking to some friends in the break room, and this one guy, he's from Boston, and he was... you know, kind of dreading going back because, every time I go back, everybody asks me the same 5 questions for 3 days and forget they've asked me over and over. And I've got this one relative who does this, another relative who does that. So I was like, okay, this is how you can make humor of that whole situation, man. Just assign a song to stereotype each person. And just let one... let everything they say go in one ear and out the other, and every time, say, you've got the alcoholic uncle, every time he starts speaking, just, you know, start singing Friends in Low Places in your head. And then when the drug-addicted college student comes up, just, you know, switch your internal station to Riders on the Storm. And it really did help him make comedy of the entire situation. So I thought I would bring that article back for this Thanksgiving for those travelers.
Okay. Yeah, I was perusing, and I came across that one. I thought maybe it was new, but I, of course, why would I actually look at the date on it? Stupid ass. That's cool. Like, I mean, does it come easy to you, or are there times you turn it on and you're like, I'm getting nothing?
Yeah, sometimes. There have been times where I sat down to write something I thought was a good idea, and it just wasn't my day. Just things weren't coming out right. And
can you think of one?
Sometimes those. Actually, there was one article I did. It was called 12 Outstanding Pearl Jam Songs Ignored by Mainstream Radio. And I worked on that one in two or three different segments where it just explaining the song just wasn't coming to me. Well, it was coming to me, just not in a way that was maybe thought-provoking. So I would shelf it and come back to it on an on the day that, you know, maybe I felt more creative. And sometimes that's just how they work. And
that's funny, like, you're not able to come up with anything, like, real substantial, so you're just, like, stating facts about, you know, who the person is. I don't know, the idea of it not really working out kind of sounds funny to me.
and sometimes, keep running notes because I'll think of something, and if I don't write it down just then, I'll forget it.
Sure. Yeah.
Like, for instance, I did this one article on famous musicians and their lookalikes, and it came to me that the entire band of Arcade Fire, as horrible a band as they are, they look just like the McCoyle family from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Really?
They look exactly like that. Just a camper load of freaks, really. And,
that's funny. I have to look that up.
So that's one I had to. I got to write that down before I forget it.
That's cool. I like it. So you said examiner.com is where that stuff can be found. Is that right?
Yeah. Examiner.com.
All right.
The book that's coming out in December, A Fire That Wouldn't Go Out, is. A lot of the material in that book is taken from my writing on examiner.com. The book itself is just about my own musical journey and how your own journey as a reader probably is intertwined with it or is a lot like it. So it's to make it easily relatable. But a lot of the concerts I've written about on Examiner have been there just, you know, reworded for the book. Yeah, so there the Thanksgiving article's in there just as a side note. So a lot of my writing on Examiner kind of morphed into this book. So it's if you like what I've done on there, then the book is something you'll definitely get a kick out of.
Now tell me a little bit about your first book. And again, I said this before we turned this thing on. I did minimal research. Like, normally if I have an author, I try to, you know, get the book and actually read it before we do any of this stuff, but I didn't do that. I don't have a title. I have nothing. I suck.
Well, it was, it's not anything for a wide audience, really. It's, that was called A Series of Bad Ideas, and it was actually written under a pen name, Matthew Aberdeen, rather than my own name, and it was more of a collection of funny stories, like, you know, so-and-so did this one night, and it was hilarious. So that kind of started as a blog on MySpace.
Good one. were they all personal stuff?
Excuse me?
Was it personal stuff? Like, you were the guy?
Yeah, and I changed everybody's name because, you know, there was a lot of incriminating stuff in there. So all the names are changed, and, you know, because you don't want to be like 40 and then like, well, you're applying for a job and be like, I read this book about you, you know, jumping out of a hotel window into a pool. so it wasn't really meant for a wide audience. The people that lived those stories, you know, they loved it and thought it was funny. But it's probably not something you're going to go into Barnes & Noble and see on the bestseller rack or anything.
Sure.
Because it was, you know, pretty much a collection of MySpace blogs, you know, reformatted into a novel form. So it was more of a fun project for those involved. Didn't sell a lot of copies, of course. I didn't become rich. But the
can you give me like one? Can you give me like one funny one and one like really like messed up one?
Yeah. Without getting too crass on your show, there's
crass it up
in there. there's one story in there about my friend Eric, and he I went to visit him in Oklahoma City, and the title of the chapter was called Metallic Wheeze. You know, like Darth Vader, the Metallic Wheeze. So we had went to a bar, and this old lady, who this is the textbook cougar, came up to him, and they knew each other, and they had evidently had, hooked up a few times. So I ended up, you know, kind of being the third wheel and going back to her house with her. So, you know, it was the bar closed. We're kind of 2 in the morning. We're hanging out in the kitchen. And he decides, you know, he's going to go in the living room and, you know, hook up with his cougar. So he does this for a while, and, you know, you are kind of, you always say like, no, I'm not watching, but of course you're watching. So I've watched this whole thing go down. And at one point during the interlude, he raises up off the couch. He's like, man, give me some water. I'm parched. So I poured a whole glass of clear white tequila and handed it to him. So he started chugging it like it was water, so he threw up.
Oh.
Immediately. But then he went right back in. He was a trooper. He went right back in.
Jesus.
And he's drilling this cougar. So when the whole thing was over, he got up and came back to the kitchen, and I heard this metallic wheeze like coming from the living room. I'm like, what in the hell? What's going on in there? Excuse me. I'm wondering what's going on. I was like, Eric, what in the world's happening in there? And he's like, I don't know. So I peeked my head around the corner, and this old lady's sitting there buck naked in a recliner and got this breathing apparatus on.
Oh, Jesus.
I guess she's got this machine and everything strapped to her. So I guess after she has sex, she has to go get on this breathing machine.
How old is the lady we're talking about?
I would say she was probably in her late 40s or 50s. But
it's a fucking sleep apnea mask or something.
And, we had a couple more drinks and listened to this awful metallic wheeze for a while. And, it was about 5 that morning we finally got a taxi out of there. But I had no desire to go back.
That's rough, dude.
But that's an example, the metallic wheeze. That was the story that was in there.
Right on. How about, that one's pretty messed up, but like, how about like a real nice possible felony or something like that?
Well, no, I'll give you a sweeter story.
All right.
This happened to me when I was in preschool. And this was 1980. You know, I was probably 2.5-3 years old, and I remember this just perfectly, like it was yesterday. But it was 1980, and somebody had brought in the Imperial Walker toy, you know, from Empire Strikes Back.
Sure, yeah.
And it was just awesome. It was the most amazing toy I'd ever seen. And I played with it all day, and I didn't want anybody else to play with because I was having so much fun with it. And so to keep anybody from playing with it, I just shit my pants. Just right there. And that kept everybody away, the smell, and I was just happy just stewing in this pile in my pants just so nobody else could. Of the Imperial Walker.
I did not see that coming. I, to be honest, I was sort of like, I was starting to just picture the toy, and I'm like, yeah, man, that would be kind of sweet. And then bang, you hit me with a shit your pants.
That's how you keep somebody from playing with your toys.
Hey,
you
man,
just become the stink pot.
That's quick thinking for a little guy. Holy shit. Well, that's cool, man. When is the new deal? I just linked the series of bad ideas to the Facebook. You can pick that up at Amazon. Kindle version, $6. Paperback, $12. Get it. I'm going to buy the Kindle version. When is the new journt drop?
It's going to be December 16th. Right now, it's almost done editing. The cover art will be done this week, actually. Which I'm very excited about. If you remember my apartment in Glenwood, it had all the concert posters everywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So the cover is actually a concert poster of the book, A Fire That Wouldn't Go Out, Dustin M. Pardue. But it's made to look like a concert poster. So I'll have T-shirts, posters, and everything.
Cool.
A really good artist that I know from my hometown is actually doing it. And he sent me some samples and... they're awesome. So looking forward to that. So it should be out ready on December 16th. That's a Tuesday.
Right on. I'll be in touch and I'll see if I can help you out on this end too.
Absolutely. I would appreciate it.
Absolutely. That's what we do this for, man. That's how we get seen, you know. Hopefully I'll get a shitload of hits out of this thing too, you know. Let's talk a little bit. Let me see where we're at. We're doing pretty good here. We're already 40 minutes. I did want to ask you about like your travels and stuff like that. Like, have you always been like a big traveler? Is that just recently, because of the writing and all that, or?
Well, that's always traveling is always something I've aspired to do. I've been all over the United States. From just moving around from job to job and going to concerts and whatnot. But I got divorced back in 2007. So last year when
you
I
were married?
Got rid of all that. Yeah, I was.
I remember that.
For about 2 years.
How weird.
That was before I knew you. But when I first moved to Colorado, I was married.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. All right.
So after the divorce, I got rid of all that debt last year. So, like, hey, I can actually do something with my money now. So I set out last year to I'm going to see as much as I possibly can. So I went to 8 different countries last year, continued it this year, went to 5 more. So we'll see what happens next year. This year, hit up Spain, Switzerland, Sweden, Ireland, and the Netherlands. Last year, London, Paris, Amsterdam, Prague, Athens, Greece, Rome, Italy. Just I love going to Europe. It's there's so much history there, and so much to see. If you're a student of history, I mean, what better place to be? Every little brick somewhere has meaning. And that was my dog, excuse me.
I know it's like morbid, or I don't know what you'd call it, but I feel like going to Germany would be super weird, but really interesting.
It was one of the weirdest places you'll ever go. I spent some time in Berlin, and just being there is like you get that same feeling that if you've ever been to Dealey Plaza in Dallas or Ground Zero in New York, you know, where something atrocious happens. You get that same kind of feeling in Berlin where, you know, it was bad. It was humanity at its most extreme. So we took this tour, a walking tour this guy gave, the Third Reich tour, and it was creepy. You know, we got to see a lot of things we wouldn't have normally got to see, everything that was left from that era, which the Germans are hardcore about that. You don't mention it. You don't talk about it. You do that Hail Hitler sign in public, that's a 500 euro fine.
No shit.
You don't say the word Nazi. It's they don't say the word Nazi at all. They say National Socialist Party. And it's it was part of our history, and they didn't actually start teaching it in school there until the 1980s. So it was
bizarre,
it was a very
man.
Strange place to be, and especially I think the most surreal place that in Berlin that I was standing on the sidewalk, knowing right below my feet is where Hitler's last stand happened. The bunker was right below where I was standing. That was an eerie feeling to be there.
Yeah, it's weird. Like, I wouldn't say it. Like, I mean, I know very little about history of any kind, to be honest with you, but like, I am really fascinated with World War II, mostly the European theater, obviously, because of like the level of villainy that went on and that, you know, they were fighting against is just like, it's, you can't even like imagine it. Like what you just said about being like on top of a bunker, being like in the vicinity of where that guy was, that would just be so
weird. It gives you chill bumps, really. Like, you don't know. It is. The hair literally will raise up on your arm. Like, wow, you know, this really went down here. It was bad.
Yeah, and I've heard people that they go see Auschwitz or whatever, and they, you know, just to like see, like, it'd be one thing if it was just like a field, and then you have to like imagine what was going on, but like structures are still there, and
yeah,
like you're like, fuck, you know, like that's where it all went down. Like it's just a fucking weird feeling. And I don't know why I like that kind of uncomfortability, but I do.
Yeah, another really just weird hair-raising place was visited the Anne Frank House in Amsterdam,
mm-hmm.
where that family hid. And that was another really just eerie place to be standing in. I can't, you know, it's kind of weird. This is a tourist attraction, but kind of understand it at the same time. Sometimes you got to just put yourself in that place to really, you know, comprehend what people went through.
Yeah, man.
Strange place.
That's pretty wild. So you're not really like a tropical guy or whatever. You're like, I'm going to go to Jamaica. Not really.
Not really. I've been to beaches all my life. you know, you can go to beaches anywhere, or you could go, you know, stand in the middle of the Colosseum in Rome. So you can take, you know, the history of what happened on this beach and put it against the history of what happened in Rome. And to be standing there, to me, is much more worthwhile than, you know, going to Jamaica and lying on the beach, which is more relaxing, of course. Because, you know, when I do a trip like that, I'm up at 6 a.m. Like, I've got to see every possible thing that I can see.
Right. And you know what?
For 2 or 3 weeks straight.
Like, travel is such a weird, like a non-issue, not thought about thing in my life that you just, like, totally changed my whole attitude toward it. It's like, why wouldn't you, like, you can watch, you know, documentaries or even, you know, fictional stuff or whatever and kind of get an idea, but, like, why wouldn't you go to, you know, some of these places and actually see, like, for yourself what's going on? And I've always just thought, I guess a lot of times when I think about people traveling, I base it on, like, you know, they go to LA for a week and do this, or they go like Hawaii. Like, it seems fun, but like, there's no real, like, I don't know. Like, you just proved to me, like, it would be more, for me, it would be more fun to go somewhere like that because of the substance and what you're going to see there. So yeah, that's weird. You just totally changed my mind.
You gain a lot of perspective when you go to other countries. You know, what I mean by that is you really get to see how people see you as an American. And, you know, you hear stories about people are rude, and things like that. That's not the case at all. Like, I spent time in France, and people say the French are so rude. The French are awesome, as long as you don't act like an arrogant American.
Sure.
Then they're really nice. You gain a lot of perspective, and you see how much people respect America. They all want to talk politics with you. Everybody you talk to, and you're like, I don't really want to talk about politics.
Why today. Is that?
One constant question, just sitting around talking to people, they'll ask is, like, we love America. What are you doing? What is America doing? Is the government going crazy? And we're pulling for you, because that's what they all say. We pull for you because our government doesn't do anything unless you guys do it first or say it's okay. So, one thing that's really constant in Europe is people really support President Obama, as do I. And they're really, really hopeful. And they say things have gotten better since he's been in office, which is great. There was one guy that I met from Denmark. This was in Berlin, Germany. I met him at the Ramones Museum. And we were outside having a drink, and he was really adamant about wanting to talk politics, and he put it really well. He said, through the first part of this century, with this Bush asshole you guys had, like the entire world was terrified because you had a madman in there, and it's like things are getting a little better now, but. He's like, this was in September 2012. He's like, will you please vote for Mr. Obama in November? I'm like, yeah, man, I got you covered. It's all right. he's like, just please, whatever you do, please. I'm like, hey, it's all right. And you get a lot of perspective about how people perceive you. And if you don't act like an arrogant America, yeah, and people respond to you, and they're very friendly to you, and they make jokes too, like, "Oh, you're an American, you don't have a gun, do you?" When you're coming in, so you're not armed, are you? You're
like, yes, I am. Back off.
but it's not the rude fest that you hear the horror stories about. I haven't experienced that whatsoever.
That's cool, man. Well. Happy travels. Hopefully you'll get to see everything you want to see. I'm going to ask you a couple things, last couple questions, and I'll let you go. I think we did all right here.
Okay.
I think besides like a meet and greet and like hanging out backstage with the band, I'm sure you've had like probably one of the high points as far as like a concert experience with the Pearl Jam show. If you could only if you knew you were only going to get one more press pass ever, who would you want it to be for?
One more press pass ever. It's too bad John Lennon's not still alive. But I guess
that works. You can go with that.
If I could have met anyone, it would have been John Lennon. One of the my favorite songwriters. Of all time, I mentioned that in the prologue to my new book, A Fire That Wouldn't Go Out. When I'm talking about the prologue is all about what makes music great, and one of the things was that really really tugs my heart is standing on the corner of West 72nd Street in New York City and thinking why, 'cause that's where he was murdered. If I could have met and interviewed one guy or just shook his hand and said thank you, it would have been John Lennon, for sure.
Nice answer. One last one, because my other one is stupid. This one's kind of stupid too, but fuck it.
There's no stupid questions.
Oh, trust me, I can prove that wrong all the time. there's 11 albums now, right? Or is there 10?
For whom?
For Pearl Jam.
They just came out with their 10th.
Their 10th, okay. Let's say somehow, like, all 10 albums are being destroyed. You never get to see them again. You get to keep one.
Get to keep one. I know the common answer would be their debut album, 10. But as meaningful as that record was to me, and that's what got me listening to them, I would go with their fifth record, Yield, from 1998, just cause that record to me came out at a time in my life where I really needed it, and I found that record carried me through my last 2 years of college and kind of got me to where I am right now, because it got me over the hump, those words on that record. So if I had to pick one and the rest go away, I would go with Yield.
Right on, man. Well, hey, I think we did it. Hope to have you on again. Well, like I said, you know, maybe closer, we'll have you a third mic on something when the book is back out, or not back out, when it's out.
All right. No problem. I'll be glad to.
We got at Dustin M. Pardue on Twitter, and you have a pretty sweet Instagram that obviously chronicles the travels. What's your Instagram?
It's just my name, Dustin Pardue.
Okay. Go check those out for real. Like, the Twitter, you don't seem to be on there too much, which is fine, but the Instagram is really cool because it has a lot of your travel pictures with all the fun little filters on there, people. So go check that out. Also, like I said, I did post a link, but also go to Amazon and check out, say it again. Fuck, I forget the name.
A Series of Bad Ideas.
And that's A Series of Bad Ideas by Matthew Aberdeen, the pen name. I'm going to go buy that shit right now and look for the...
You'll probably get some laughs out of it.
I hope so. I can't wait to read that, the one you just told about. It sounds awful. Jesus. And then December 16th, Fire That Wouldn't Go Out. Did I get that one right? I'm hoping.
that's correct.
Cool.
Fire That Wouldn't Go Out, yes.
Yeah, December 16th, and we'll be helping you out with that if we can. So I appreciate this, dude. Had a great time with you.
Yeah, me too, man. I had a blast. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad we got, you know, hooked up, and I finally wasn't lazy this time and did it. So, but anything you want, you know, I have a little reach. Just hook me up, hit me up, and I'll do whatever you need to do. So,
next time I come to Colorado, we'll have to get up.
Hell yeah! All right, my man, I'll let you go. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, and have a good evening, and happy Thanksgiving, and all that good stuff.
You're a sweet man, Dustin. You too, man. Take care.
All right. Open doors, so I walk inside. Close my eyes, find my face too.